Yitzhak. We went through the Shlosha Dvarim of Talmidei Shlomo Avraham Avinu and Shlosha Dvarim of Talmidei Shlomo Avraham Avinu, right? What's left for us to do in the Mishnah? We're up to the heart of the Mishnah, really, which is the difference between Talmidei Shlomo Avraham Avinu and Talmidei Shlomo Avraham Avinu. So it says three things. It comes out to three things. Three things. What are the three things? The first one is what? Is Ayin Tova. Ayin Tova. Ayin Tova means what? Ayin Tova means that the person is indifferent towards wealth, basically. It means that he has the value of wealth. Wealth has only one value, which is basically to be used for the purpose of Kadosh Baruch Hu's plan, the good, the ultimate good, and otherwise there's no value. Like a Avraham Avinu. Second thing is Ruach Nemucha. What does Ruach Nemucha mean? So Ruach Nemucha means that the person is not into the world of the instinctual. Correct? Is that right? Right now? Is that right? The world of the instinctual. The world of the instinctual. That's Ruach Nemucha. And the opposite is Ruach Gevoha. Gevoha. I'm sorry. No. Ruach Nemucha and Nefesh Shefela. Okay. Nefesh Shefela and Ruach Nemucha. What is the difference between Nefesh Shefela and Ruach Nemucha? So Ruach Nefesh Shefela means, on the contrary, Nefesh Shefela means the instinctual, right? Am I right? Yeah. Nefesh Shefela because Nefesh means Nefesh refers to the instinctual. Nefesh Chaya refers to the instinctual. Nefesh. But Ruach is something that refers to something human. Okay, so Nefesh Shefela means the instinctual. It means that the individual is the individual is not involved in the world of the instinctual. That's like Avraham Avinu with Sarah. The story with Sarah went through, correct, right? And then and the opposite is Bilam HaRasha, who was completely involved in the instinctual. Okay. And Bilam HaRasha. So Talmidei Shlomo Avraham Avinu. Okay. Yeah. It's interesting, I know it means what people refer to as the evil eye, but it means the eye of an evil person. Ayin Ra means a certain midah. A midah in which the person can't, where the person is involved in the, he must have whatever, his eye is bad. It doesn't mean his eye is bad. It doesn't mean he's a bad person. It means he has a bad eye. It means the eye always causes him to desire more things. So it's a bad eye. It's an eye that functions as detriment. That's what Ayin Ra is. Okay? As opposed to the rough point of view, as opposed to Ayin Hora, it means Ayin Shel Hora, an eye of the bad. It means the person is bad, the individual is bad. But Ayin Ra means that he has a bad eye, which means that every sees he desires. That's the desire for endless amounts of wealth. That's Dilma Marasa. Okay. What is interesting, Nefesh Shefela means what? Means let's take the other way. Nefesh, what's the opposite way? Is Nefesh Rechava. Nefesh Rechava. Nefesh Rechava means like Bilam. That he wants, there's no end to what he wants. Okay. Nefesh Rechava. And the good one is called Nefesh Shefela. It's an interesting thing. And actually, it should have been Nefesh, if you say the bad one is what, is Nefesh. The good one is Nefesh. The bad one is Nefesh Rechava. So the good one should be what? The good one should be Nefesh Kitzara. Nefesh Kitzara. But it doesn't say that. It says the good one is Nefesh Shefela. Nefesh Shefela. A low Nefesh. Low. Why is it, what does it have to do with why? Why is it low? Why is it low? Why does it say that? Because Nefesh Kitzara. Yes. It's an interesting psychological implication. What it means is like this. It means that a person that doesn't desire, a person that doesn't desire doesn't have any desire for endless taiva has to have a low spirit. Which means to say that the desire for endless for endless satisfaction stems from a haughty, a certain kind of haughtiness. And that means the that's the story I one time mentioned, the story of the in the garden, of the that he never ate from a sacrifice of another. Because he said, because most of them are insincere. And he says, one time palm boil I echad min adam. And he said, why did you have beautiful hair? He says, why did you destroy your hair? He says, because I looked into the pool of water and I saw how handsome I was. He says, he says, and my evil inclination took hold of me, and I wanted to remove me from the world. So he says, how could you be haughty in a world that's not yours? And one who is eventually going to be simply decomposed lying in the ground, lying in the earth. So what does it mean? It means to say that it's a facto, an individual that wants endless satisfaction has to have a wrong concept insofar as his position in the universe is concerned. In other words, he can't tell himself he can't assume a realistic position. Realistic position is the person doesn't have a taiva, the person doesn't leave my person, how should a person feel for the satisfaction that he can't attain? The attitude of this nazir, which is, who am I to, it's an olam shein shalach, we have to recognize. It's an olam shein shalach, recognizes intrinsic limitations. This is not his world. The one who wants endless satisfaction has a feeling that the world is mine. I can conquer the world. And that's why it says the person who is able to turn away from taiva is called a nefesh tefela. Nefesh tefela means that psychologically, it's a psychological humility. Psychologically, who am I in this world? What am I? I'm going to exist here for a few years, and then I'm leaving of a soleil. And a person has that attitude, he doesn't mind if he can't attain a certain satisfaction. Because the realistic position of what he is in this existence doesn't permit him to have such fantasy. The fantasy stems from a misguided concept about himself. But the world is his, he can't get a world. So if he doesn't attain the satisfaction, he's disappointed and distraught. An individual has a correct, a realistic concept of the self. If he's missing a taiva, he says that he recognizes that it's not, this taiva isn't his to begin with. It's a situation, it's an olam shein shalach. This is not your world. It's not your situation. And in a few years, in a few short years, he's going to be decomposed, physically be non-existent. If that's the case, then what difference does it make if he misses a taiva or attains a taiva? The whole importance that is attached to this is based upon the fantasy that an individual's position in the world, which is unrealistic, which is based upon haughtiness. This is a psychological, there's a psychological kind of humility, a psychological humility. In order for a person to not to be involved in the world of taiva, he must have a certain psychological humility. It's of a philosophical nature also, but it's borders on the psychological. That's the Gemara of the Nazir. It's not yet the highest level. The highest level of humility is a different kind of humility. That's completely intellectual humility. What is that? That's ruach nemucha. That's why nochi yafafeisa. That only a philosopher can tell you. But the lower kind of humility is a psychological humility. That's the nozim in adam. He was able to perceive that kind of humility. Who am I? What's my existence? I only think something. I do think something. It's not my world. It's not my. I don't have control. The fantasy of an individual that he has control over everything, that he can accomplish anything. A fantasy is based upon a fantasy of immortality, and it's based upon a fantasy of overestimation of the self. So that's why it's called, the good attribute is called not nefesh tetzara, because nefesh tetzara would be correct, because nefesh tetzara would mean that he doesn't attain the title. But it goes a step further. Why? Well, what is the idea that gives him this removal from the world of taiva? And the idea is that it's nefesh tefela. Nefesh tefela. But when it wants to give you the evil one, so it doesn't say nefesh gevoha, because nefesh gevoha would simply imply haughtiness. No, but you want to say nefesh rechava means that you speak about the action of of gathering in endless amounts. So that's why it says nefesh rechava. But on the good one, it goes one step beyond. It goes to the cause of the ability of not being upset that he didn't attain his desires, and that is nefesh shefela. That's where the Mishnah, if you just by changing the word, it gives you both ideas. What the condition is? The condition is in the evil one. That's nefesh rechava. But it doesn't have to say nefesh shefela. It wouldn't tell you anything else. It tells you the cause of the ability to withstand his desire and to not be disappointed if things didn't work out the way he wanted. And what is that? That's a realistic assessment of what his existence is in the present, and in terms of removal of the fantasy of mortality. I know that is Rima V'Saleya. Rima V'Saleya. Okay. Rima V'Saleya and Ofer V'Efer are two different things. Rima V'Saleya is a psychological realization. Anybody can have that. Ofer V'Efer is a philosophical realization. An awful lot. It means I'm expecting the universe. Then a person has to have a perception of the endless chokhmah of a kodesh baruch in the universe. Then he can say, "Vanoch and Yafa Vayefer." Two different things. Okay. But it's precise. The terminology in the Mishnah is precise. Now, the question that we have to face is one question. What is this? These three things? What are these three things? What are these three things? Why these three? And the Rabbeinu Yonah makes a point of saying the reason why it says these three things are many, many characteristics, many attributes to the followers of Ramah. Talmidus of Ramah, not Talmidus of Bona Russia. By the way, what if you Talmidus of Bona Russia? You can look at today's politician. That's Talmidus of Bona Russia. That's a clear example. The exposés on the politicians show clearly what kind of Talmidim they are. Try to present themselves as Talmud of Shalom Rav. When you look into them, you see clearly that they're Talmud of Shalom Rav. So you can learn something from Talmud. Okay. Now, let's get into the question of the three. What are the three? Rabbeinu Yonah says that the reason why there's three is because of the fact that these three are kolo everything. They're kolo everything. In other words, these three incorporate the entire concept of perfection, Avraham Avinu, Talmid of Avraham Avinu, and Ru'um HaZeh, in juxtaposition to that, in Dorim HaRasha, these three constitute the very essence of what evil is, what wicked is. That's why these three. Okay, so let's understand. What are the three? Why these three? What do the three represent? One is a sexual type. That's what? That's referred to as nefesh rechava, correct? Nefesh rechava. Then you have what else? You have the chemdas hamamon. Chemdas hamamon is referred to as ayin ruach, okay? And then you have ruach gevoah. Why these three? Why do these three incorporate everything? That's what we have to understand. These three things have everything. Either good on one side or evil on the other side. What's the magical power of these three? How do the three work together? What do the three represent? That's the question. So essentially, the central and most essential question we're looking. Okay? So what do you think? The height of perfection or the depths of depravity? Yes. Kavod really isn't mentioned. It's interesting. Kavod isn't mentioned. Yeah. Well, let me ask the question a little better, okay? It would seem... Well, let me ask the question a little more directly. It would seem to me you should be able to reduce it to one. What would the one be? The one midah that is the greatest midah of all midahs is what? Midah Tanova. V'ish Moshe Anav Ma'od, Mikol Adam HaShat Mei Adama. So the Torah says, and the Torah wants to describe Moshe Rabbeinu's perfection, so it uses one needle. What does it mean? Another. It seemed to me, if you asked me to write the Mishnah, I would have said, there's one thing. Avraham Avinu is Vanochi Ofer V'Efer. Vanochi Ofer V'Efer. And once you have Vanochi Ofer V'Efer, what more do you need? That's it. A total recognizes philosophically that he's Ofer V'Efer, a speck in the universe that is capable of perceiving. Because HaKadosh Baruch Hu has God endowed him with a divine gift, he's capable of using a certain tool to perceive, to scratch the surface of the infinite Chokhmah HaKadosh. But essentially, what is he? He's nothing. That would seem to me to describe the fact. That describes the fact. And Ru'um HaZeh, in juxtaposition to this, I would say that the Now, what is the worst, the farthest removed from perfection would be a govalei. Okay, govalei. What does the pasuk say? The pasuk says with regard to Torah Hashem called govalei. Torah Hashem, it's Torah. Torah means it's an abomination before God. Govalei wasn't an abomination before God. It means he's the furthest person removed, furthest removed from God. So if you have this, what do you require the other two for? What do you require the other two for? You would see that that's enough. Okay, that's the question. By the way, I mean, in Yadis's goal is a strange goal. Because the goal in Yadis is that the person is always trying to reach a level where he is, where he has the recognition of the self. He is, like the Rambam described, a Briya Shela V'Afela, Omei Bedas Ma'ita L'Fnei Kam Deas. I mean, that is the goal of a person. A person's goal in life is to reach that level where he has a realization of the self. That he is a lonely creature, shvela v'afela, dark. Dark means that his mind is not clear, and he's omei b'das me'ita, with a very flimsy, thin, frail mind, before tamim deos, before the perfection, the ultimate perfection of all knowledge, which is HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That is the goal that a person, it's the same kind of a goal, in the opposite direction of modern society. But this is the goal, and that's why the Gemara says, in my text, the Gemara says, that one of them alone said, I was inspired for two things. I was inspired for the wealth of a certain, of another Amara, and he says, it's for the Ganivus of another one. Get it right, Ganivus of another one. He says, because in the Chazal, wealth is a good. The wealth of, I forgot it was, the one of my, that God gave me. But the Ganivus of this person, I never was able to do well with it. It means he wasn't able to attain. So in Yadis, a person is looking forward. It's a strange kind of a goal to look forward to the day when a person can have the realization that he's a Bia Shela Vafela, Omei Bedas Me'ita L'Fnei Kamim Deos, and he recognizes that if he has such a vision, this will be the ultimate state of happiness that he can achieve. The ultimate state, if only he could have that vision. The vision of himself is a Bia Shela Vafela. It's an interesting kind of a goal. But that's the goal of Yadis. And the problem is that a person can't reach that level. So that level is not a depressing level. On the contrary, the Jew recognizes that level gives him the utmost happiness and satisfaction to reach that level. But it would seem that in that level incorporates everything. So what do you have to have the other two things for? That's the question. Okay? Okay. You see, I would say like this, A person has many perfect qualities. And a person can be dichotomized. You see, a person can be a thinker in one area, and yet in another area be totally crazy. I mean, there were mathematicians. Pascal was a genius, one of the greatest geniuses in mathematics. And so far as philosophy is concerned, he was an absolute machine. Crazy, completely crazy. Because the human mind can be dichotomized. You can have a person that's a great thinker in one area, another area, he's completely insane. The whole Yadis, if there's anything to demonstrate the system of Yadis, is that he has been able to produce. That the Torah doesn't allow such a thing. The Torah doesn't allow a person to be a thinker in one area. The Torah demands the way the system of Torah is set up, the halachic system, and the philosophical system is set up in a way that makes a person a chacham in every area. We never had a Talmud chacham that was a gadol hador, a leader, that was a chacham in one area and the rest of his personal life was crazy. No such thing. So if Torah doesn't permeate the whole individual in every aspect of his life, then the individual is failed. And has nothing to do with Torah. And strangely enough, we just haven't produced people like this. It's an amazing thing. It shows you the force of Torah. The Torah really affects every aspect of the person. It doesn't matter what kind of personality he has. All kinds of personalities. Personality is immaterial. But a person could be, a human being could be dichotomized. And I would say as follows, that it's possible for a person to have a recognition of Anochi Ofer V'Efer, and yet for the same person not to be on a perfected level. Why? Because a person can have a philosophical bent, can have a philosophical trend in his nature, where when he reflects, momentarily, he could see Vanochi Ofer V'Efer. But still, the rest of his life, the energies that he expends in the rest of his existence are totally not in conformity
with the good, not along with the good. Okay? Not along with the good. Which means to say, that's really your Sodi Abbas. Your Sodi Abbas, the Rambam says it in Hukkashiva. Rambam says in Hukkashiva. What's Rambam in Hukkashiva? How are they done a person? So the Rambam says, according to his, you see, Rov Kochmoso, and his Maisim. Let's get the lesson right. And his Maisim. Two things. His Chachma, Rov Maisim and Chachmoso. Chachmoso, Rov Maisim, right? So two things. The Rambam sent a letter. What is the letter that the Rambam sent? That wasn't written over by him, it was written over by a Talmudic, his letter over. So some want to say that it's a spurious letter, but it basically, there's no reason to believe it. In Russia, it might not be exact, because it's written by a Talmud. But in there, the question was asked, the question was raised, what is the situation? What is the situation so far as a goy obtaining a share, a chelik in olam haba, And the Rambam says that if he has the proper ideas, and also, the proper motive, perfection insofar as his actions are concerned, that he doesn't live a life of taiva, he lives a life of chachma. His energies are not expended in the area of taiva. And the Rambam mentions those two points, which means to say that it's possible to separate the two. That's a big mistake. A big mistake people make. This mistake was made to start with. When people started to study the Maran of Uchim, what happened was there was a group of people that studied the Maran of Uchim, and suddenly they stopped davening, and they stopped keeping the truth, and they thought that they just, what do we have to be burning all the mitzvahs for? And Rambam reduced it all to philosophy. So the whole perfection of Adam is philosophy, so all you have to do is know the Maran of Uchim inside out, cover to cover, and you have all the ideas of Yadus. As long as you believe in those ideas, so then that's it. So you're a perfected individual. So what are you in the mitzvah for? Those people made a mistake. The mistake was that they failed to realize that perfection involves two things. Perfection involves the recognition, philosophical, a certain philosophical recognition, but it involves just as much, the direction of the expenditure of the energy of the individual towards the good. And if a person is just philosophical, but he doesn't expend his energy towards the good, he really does not, doesn't have a share in the world to come. That's what the Rambam says about the goy. In order for him to have a share in the energy of the goy, she does right. In order to have a share in the world to come, there must be energy expended in the proper direction. Not just the philosophical realization. The Rambam says that even that's what the purpose of mitzvah is. That's where halacha comes in. That's where halacha is. Halacha, people think of halacha as restriction. But halacha really is not restriction. Halacha is a direction of the energies of the individual towards, on a daily basis, towards the good, and it means that the individual's energies expends it in a way that he's constantly living with chokhmas Hashem. That's what it means. In every aspect of his life. The moment you remove halacha, what you're doing is you're removing from the person's life the constant expenditure of energy in the way of chachmas alakim. Halacha really means, what halacha really means to go. What does it mean to go? It means that the person is living constantly with HaKadosh Baruch Hu's ideas in every aspect of his life, with the ideas of God. That's what halacha is. It's not a discipline. So the moment a person foregoes halacha, if he gives up halacha, he gives up perfection. It's a fact that he gives up perfection. Now, all the Mishnah does is, the Mishnah shows you the two areas that the energy will go to if it's unrestrained. What are the two areas? One area is the area of the Ayin Ra. What's the Ayin Ra? What's the Ayin Ra? I'm telling you, take your look first. The Nefesh Shefela. Nefesh Shechava would mean that he's involved in the area of the Ayin Ra. So what does it mean? What does that refer to? That refers to the lower part of man, the instinctual part of man. Then the second area it mentions is wealth. That's the Ayin Ra. What is wealth really? Why is wealth such a powerful thing? What attracts man as wealth? Why is it that a person can spend his life? And the biggest billionaire, He could be this very intelligent. I don't care how intelligent he is with regard to how to earn money. There's one question he can never answer, and that is, why are you doing this? Why are you doing this? And it's something which, when confronted with that question, he draws a complete blank. The question is, we have to be able to answer the question of the person who is involved in it. They presented this question to an individual. Who is a billionaire? And the person just stopped and couldn't talk for 5 minutes. Was simply unable to respond. So the question we have to be able to understand, to answer, what is it that drives the person? What is it that drives the person? What's that? As a matter of fact, I mean, you see now, business is bad. So people are closing their business. But what they do first, before they close the business, is they get rid of the employees. And everybody they say that if I can't have enough employees, I'm losing the business not work for me. That you're wrong for. That's a strange kind of bankruptcy. But people will first try to get rid of employees to save money. That's the way. Of course, I'm running a business. So then they give the food. But basically, you're right. You're right in what you said. There are many answers. But the many answers is really what's important. The reason is because wealth is a multi-determined phenomenon. It means to say there are many things that attract the person to wealth. Wealth is security. Wealth is cover. Wealth is tither, because it has a potential for tither. Wealth really is right. Many answers is correct. But what ultimately is wealth? What is wealth really? How would you define wealth? What's the answer? It's the sublimated form of all the tithers. That's what we get. That's why no animal can survive. Because an animal can't sublimate. An animal can't really accept it. But wealth really represents the sublimated form of every tither that man can have. That's what it is. So one psychologist wanted to say that that's why wealth can never really make a person happy. Because he says that the instinctual, the person is happy when he has satisfaction of instinct. But since wealth is sublimated, then he never really has a satisfaction. So in the end, while it's a tremendous charge, it isn't a tremendous charge to run after it, because it appears in a sublimated form that he's going to be totally satisfied, and in the end result he's completely unsatisfied, because he doesn't satisfy his instinct. Yes. Yeah, exactly. The businessman is good, right? The businessman doesn't have to spend it. He can't spend it. The person who really enjoys spending it, the person that doesn't have it. The poor person is the one that has to spend it. But the businessman doesn't have to spend it, because it represents a sublimated form of pleasure. It says pleasure in a sublimated package. Okay? So basically, you're right. There are many answers. The many answers is the one answer. The many answers is the one answer. So, it's an ego trip. It's everything. It's security. It's ego. It's tithe. It's everything. It's concentrated tithe. Well, from a political standpoint, what is it? How did the Marx put it? It's concentrated labor. Okay. It's concentrated labor. But anyways, according to the artist, wealth is not something that we can down upon. Wealth is dick as a shame. You go home with me. Tell us how much money is. But I'm not talking about that. Wealth is a good thing. I told you, because I'm only asked for somebody else's wealth. You want to have a yes, God, and his power, that he should have the wealth of this individual. And he got it. He got it. But at the same time, the same amount, rather, was misfollowed for Anderson Newsall. Because he knew that happiness is the wealth relieves the person from all the obligations that have to worry about financial problems. That's a big bracha. A tremendous bracha. But it's only a bracha if a person, once he's relieved from these obligations, if he has something to do, then it's a wonderful bracha. But if he has nothing to do after that, then he's in trouble. So Anderson Newsall means that he could recognize Chachmas Elokim, the dear Shalom HaFeilo, and he got sleep at that's a wonderful thing. And he has wealth, so he doesn't have to be bothered with it. Then a person, actually the only one that can really enjoy wealth, is the Talmud Chacham. Why? Because he really attains the reality, the realistic benefit of the wealth, which is that he's free from all the obligations. Rabbeinu Tam was a very wealthy man. Rabbeinu Tam had his wealth. He never lifted a finger. He had hundreds of servants running around all day in his house, and all he had was the pen, the kumis, and the cloth, and his own sitting right. That was wealth. He was very wealthy. He was a financier, and he used his wealth for realistic purpose. But it wasn't the enjoyment of wealth. Wealth actually represents for the Talmud Chacham the absence of involvement in mundane things that distract him from his preoccupation, which is chokhmah shalakim. That is the value of life. Of course, also the value comes in dukkah, in terms of other things, but those values are situations. If it's the situation arises that there are no enemies, that means when Khalifa is living in the highest level, then you don't need wealth to give brother. You don't need wealth to give brother. Any person that tells you the reason why the purpose of life is to have money in order to give brother is crazy. Because that means to say that in the perfect situation, there's no reason to have no purpose in existence. You have no purpose in existence. The only purpose is if people are unfortunate. If people are fortunate, you have no purpose. So the only real value is to remove a person from the distraction. Same thing as health. Same thing as health. Health has no intrinsic value. The only value is a person can only enjoy his health insofar as there is a benefit. There's a purpose. What's the purpose? That he can use energy for human activity. But just health per se, what is health per se? Doesn't mean anything. Okay. So that's really what Mammon represents. So now you see what the Mishnah says. The Mishnah comes out of the Rosh. The Mishnah says there are three aspects of perfection. What are the three? The first one is really, we'll go the, which one is the name of the professor? Get it. It splits them up for some reason. I am Tov, Ruach, Nemucha, Nefesh, Tehillah. Okay, it's interesting. Ruach, Nemucha is central. I am Tov is insofar as money is concerned, and Nefesh, Tehillah is insofar as the instinct is concerned. Yeah. So it's very good. Why does it break it up that way? It's interesting. It should have done, you have like this. You have the lowest, the instinctual, that's what I took first. That would be what? Nefesh Shefela. Then it has, that's left actually. The first one is the Ayin Tova. And in between is Ruach Nemucha. Yeah. So it goes like this. It has the sublimated, in other words, an individual, a human being who is not involved in the sublimated form of taiva. Then it switches to the philosophical perception of the perception of Anochi of Avaisa. And the last one is what? Is the instinctual. Why is it in that order? Very simple. The reason why the center one is Ruach Nemucha is because really everything hinges around the philosophical. The ultimate perfection is the philosophical. That's where the perfection resides. That's the essence of the perfection. But in order to really attain that perfection, the energies cannot be expended in either the instinctual or in the sublimated form of the instinctual. Okay? But why does it use the sublimated form of the instinctual first? The reason is because for most people, for human beings, that's really where the energies go. Most human beings are not involved in the instinctual. Instinctual is something that may be important to them, but that's not where they spend most of their energy. Most of their energies are not spent in feeling the instinctual. Most people realize that there's more satisfaction in a fantasy sense in the sublimated. The instinctual is never satisfying. The sublimated is the one that does it. So first it mentions the area where most people's desires go to, which is the sublimated form. Then it gives you in the center is the philosophical, and on the other side it places the instinctual. That's the order of the mission. But that's basically, that is the reason why you have those two. There's the philosophical on one side, the psychological and the instinctual on the other side. But as long as a person, that's a mistake a lot of people make. What if Chazal say that Moshe Rabbeinu went to do one mitzvah? The Eva, he was, always Yavzul Moshe Shalosh Aron. Why? He'd never even complete the mitzvah. But why did he do the mitzvah? Because he recognized that the mitzvah gave him perfection. The doing of the mitzvah gave him perfection. Because he wanted to go into Eretz Yisrael, and he had to say he's not going to go into Eretz Yisrael. How did he overcome his psychological distress? Through Asiyat HaMitzvah. It was Mavdul Tuarim, and the last one will be Yimotrehiyah. Yes. So that's how he perfected himself. Through Asiyat HaMitzvah. Asiyat HaMitzvah. That's the concept of Asiyat HaMitzvah. Also, without mitzvah, there's no perfection. I mention it all the time. You take a look. The dialogues of Plato. Plato was a great philosopher. And many of the ideas of Plato are really the ideas of Torah. He arrived at a lot of the ideas. Socrates arrived at a lot of the ideas of Torah on his own. A tremendous genius. Nothing. On the contrary, we believe, since the Torah is true, that a person who has a sechel and yashar can really, on his own, arrive at many of the ideas. Avraham Avinu, of course, was the greatest philosopher. He was able to arrive at most of the ideas, of the Torah on his own. But another individual could do it too. And Socrates was able to, on his own, arrive at many of the ideas. The whole Derech HaChaim HaTorah, the Rambam mentioned this. Derech HaChaim HaTorah, removal from Gashmi, from speechless, from psychological, involvement in Chochmah. He had the whole, the basis of the Derech HaChaim he had. Plato had. But do you know anybody that was perfected by Plato? Do you ever meet somebody and say he's perfected because of Plato? You won't meet anybody like that. Plato's off, yeah. Plato's off, you won't meet him. That's it. But Iyadus produced not one, but hundreds and hundreds. Hundreds throughout the Dora. And Arayomazah. Why? Because of the Mishnah. Because it's not just the philosophical. I can't emphasize enough. It's not just the philosophical, but it's direction of the energy. And I'd say if there's one battle that you have in our yeshiva, I would say that's the battle. And if the moment people see the chokmah, they immediately just draw to it like a magnet. I go, this is it. But then they want to get rid of their emotions. They just want to let the emotions go loose. And they'll have the chokmah. After all, they feel better and much higher level now than the other person that doesn't have the chokmah. The chokmah, you can't argue chokmah. No matter what, the person always feels superior to that chokmah. Okay, now nobody's going to praise ignorance. Ignorance, everybody recognizes ignorance. But that's a big mistake. That's a serious mistake. And in all yeshiva, I notice it, that the first few years, even a person who introduced and sees the Chachmas HaTorah, they tend to be lax with regard to, they don't realize the benefit of mitzvah. It's a little bit harder to recognize the benefit of mitzvah, of controlling, directing the energy towards the good, going against an emotion, not allowing a leak of energy in an area where you're wasting your time and you're directing yourself to the opposite of your real goal. That's a difficult thing. In the world you find, you don't find too many philosophers as mine as that, but you do find people who are involved in the emotional. Without cost, because that's something else. They're simply counteracting evil emotions, so on an emotional level, they go to the opposite side and they control. That's true. That's a need of Namor. That's the level of an Amara. That's the level of an Amara. Self-control. But to find both is very difficult. That's how Midav Shalav HaMavir. That is not easy. They're both difficult. A person could learn Torah and still be not perfected. There are things. A person who learns Torah with Kante in order to receive it. Or a person who learns Torah, did they derive it because there are people that learn Torah and thought that God is physical? Like Shomach HaBore. They learn Torah, he doesn't even know Torah, and he's in the halacha, they know. But that's not perfection, that's imperfection. The halacha, the whole Torah, the system of halacha, the method of thinking in halacha, is all supposed to eventuate in the perception of reality, which is a proper understanding insofar as man can attain of a Kadosh Baruch Hu and of his place in the universe, and the whole of reality, how it pertains to him. There's a certain vision that has to emerge. And he has to have a certain picture has to emerge. The picture doesn't emerge, there's no perfection. But it involves two things, it involves two components. The central component is the philosophical, and then you have the psychological, which is the sublimated, and the instinctual. That's really the sum total. That's why Ben Yonah was right when he said that this Mishnah reflects the ultimate state of perfection in man. That's correct. Yeah. That's it. Why is Yaakov in his Bechish above us, and yet Avraham Avinu would seem to be the most perfected? The truth of the matter is that we say Avraham Avinu was the greatest. Did I say Dr. Hashem? Or Magen Avraham? Baruch Hoshmi. Baruch Hoshmi. Which means Magen Avraham means Avraham Avinu was really, he was the originator. The originator, as much as you can perfect the system, and Aristotle says it, that the originator of a system is the greatest. Even though somebody comes after him and can take the system further, but the originator, it requires the greatest ingenuity to be the originator. Avraham Avinu was the originator. That's a b'chachot. The other others are great, but they're only human in Avraham Avinu, really. But the Gemara says, B'chir Shabbos, a good question. B'chir Shabbos is, can have it in two ways. The Mercer finds him all kinds of ways. He said that B'chir Shabbos doesn't mean, really, that he is the greatest. He said that the lifestyle from which to derive, from which to learn for an average person to derive from is really the lifestyle of Zatavira, of Rumor, because we not tell it. It doesn't mean that he is the greatest. It says different of us are different situations, but the official of us means it's the one that's chosen as the model to serve for us, but not that he was the greatest. But even if you want to say Beshisha Bavar, that he was the greatest, I would say it doesn't mean that it's a different kind of greatness. It means that he furthered the system to that he received. He furthered it more than a Ramavino. It's possible. I mean, you have to think of it. I don't want to pass judgment on it without being myopic. I'm just saying, even if you should say something like that, it doesn't mean that he is the greatest of the others. The greatest is Avram Avinu, Magen Avram. He was the originator and he's the greatest. And if one of the others perfected the system further, it's true, but it doesn't mean. The problem what it means. I would say, I could even understand that it means that in Torah, in Limud of the Torah, learned from Shem Ve'eva in the philosophy that he was able to advance it farther than Avraham Avinu. But it doesn't mean because of that. That he was the greatest, insofar as the Gavra is concerned. As far as the Gavra is concerned, Avraham Avinu was the greatest. The Varaya, the Chachosman, and what is it, Magen Avraham? Avraham Akrit, one thing other, but Magen Avraham. Okay. One thing you see from the others, and that's your third and other. That each one had a totally different life. You see from the others that each one had a different life, and you see from the others also that in Yadis, the fantasy that people have that they're going to have a comfortable existence if they keep the Torah. It's completely false. That you see from Yaakov Vino. All the Torahs he has, Mavon, Eifel, Vino, Brachel, Jesus, all the Torahs. He said, well, it's a Katatim Menorah. So you see from the others that the whole philosophy of Yadis is not really to expect from God that he's going to give you a comfortable existence. That is, Goyim have that kind of idea. That's what Goyim means. Goyim believe in their God because they expect their God or God to give them a certain kind of comfortable kind of existence. Yadis doesn't believe that. Yadis says that our great people took life the way it was for them. Each one had a different set of circumstances, but they lived with the circumstances that God gave them, and they used their chachma and their courage to live according to their chachma. That's the philosophy of Yadis. They expect a comfortable existence. And the others all had different kinds of lives. I mean, Avraham Avinu was an independent person. Yaakov was exactly the opposite. He had a cow to love on. He was completely subordinated. He had difficult existence, painful existence. At the Chalani Chor, Vaterach Balayla, Vatidat Shnasim Eynai, 20 years of torment, torture. But they never complained about it. They recognized reality, and that is really the challenge of Yaakov. To live in accordance with the reality that God gives man, and not to complain about it, not to look to escape it, but to use your chachma and your courage to work with the situation that's before you and to live the correct life. That's what you see from the other. That's the philosophy of that. It's not a philosophy of escapism. Escapism is the philosophy of the Goyim. The Goyim pray to their gods in order to that their God should save them and they should somehow escape the perils of reality. Because their religion is motivated by fear. That's how Avodah Zarah is motivated essentially by fear. So that's why they try to escape. Yadis is not motivated by fear. Yadis is motivated by a pursuit of chachma. A pursuit of reality. And it's a religion. Yadis is a religion which demands courage. Tremendous courage. Because a person can hope, can look to hope to escape. All he hopes for is to be able to live in line with the, to have the courage and the ability to live in line with the chachma for the king. That is to him his greatest treasure. And to be able to spend his days in accordance with the chachma. No matter what the situation he has to confront is. That's the philosophy of Yadis. That's the philosophy of Yadis. It's opposite to the philosophy of the Ovdei Avodah Zarah. Of the rest of the Ovdei Avodah Zarah means the rest of the entire world. Yes. That's why the Goyim are attracted to their nonsense, because they can't tolerate what they call the God of the Old Testament. Why? Because the Chor Api Vahem that's there. They're very fearful. How's the answer to them? But they invented a God which doesn't have any of these attributes which are disturbing, which allows them to withdraw into a world of escapism, where they think that the God is going to create a situation for them which is totally in line with all their desires. That's a lot of that. Yadis is a religion that demands tremendous courage. Because you don't know. A person does not know the situations that lie before him, and he doesn't expect God to guarantee him a life of pleasure and comfort. That's not what he asked for. Of course, he asks in his installment for a life in which is most conducive for Ruta Chachma, but he accepts reality, the total acceptance of reality. He was very happy, not Veroyim, but he wasn't complaining. He was stating, this is a fact. This was my existence. But his existence was constantly the Chachma from the team of the size.
Okay, now the mission continues. Well, what's the ultimate benefit? What's the ultimate result? Thank you. So what's the ultimate reward, the ultimate result of these two systems? So it's interesting. So the mission is like this. Talmidav shel Avraham Avinu. Ochlin b'olam hazeh. Ochlin b'olam hazeh. It means they enjoy this world. V'nochalin l'olam haba. And they receive an inheritance in the world to come. Shenema lahanchil oava yesh. Interesting passage. Lotraseim amale. Okay. Aval talmidav shel Bilam Arasha yoshim gehenim v'yodim lever shachas. Shenema v'ato lakim taridim lever shachas anshei domim umimbo lo yechatsu yimeim v'ani eftach bach. It means to say that they don't have olam hazeh, because it says lo yechatsu yimeim. It means they won't live half of their lives. Okay, and ultimately they inherit ber shachas, a pit of destruction. That's the ones who follow Bilam Arasha, and the ones who follow Avraham Avinu, ochalim b'olam hazeh. They enjoy this world, and Chazal didn't have a negative attitude towards this world, but because they had proper perspective, like the Gemara says in the end of Horius. The Gemara says, of course, the Pasuk wants to make a limud that a tzaddik doesn't have this world. The Gemara says, "Umi sani l'tzaddik yisrei alma." Tzaddikim don't want to have both worlds. What's wrong with both? Chazal one didn't negate all of it. The Torah doesn't negate all of Mazeh, but the Torah recognizes all of Mazeh for what it is. For what it is, a temporal state. It's chayeshah, temporal existence, temporal state, and a certain temporal value. It's not the essence, but there's no reason to negate it. There's no. The Umos Olam, the Ovei Avodah Zorah, always negate Olam Hazeh. There's a terrible thing. The kid, the enjoyments, pleasures are no good. That's the Ovei Avodah Zorah, because it's a reaction formation against what they really want. But Yadda says, is very fair-minded about Olam. Olam Hazeh is also, it's something, the Pasuk is small, that anyone that asked Achitofel was a political genius, and if you asked him advice, he'd give you the same advice as Yom Vatom. He was able logically to figure it out. It says, the Pasuk, it's in Shmuel Bey's Tezayin. Va'atzas Achitofel ashe yoaz bayomim hohein, kashe yishal ish bidvar ho lakim. Like a person would ask dvar lakim the Navi. Kain kol atzas Achitofel. Gam l'dovet gam l'avshalom. So Achitofel's answers were always that way. It means to say, sometimes a person can answer the proper answer. So you think it's like asking him a tomb. Yeah, just so happened to hear it right. But it says by Achitofel, King Kol Atzas Achitofel, Gam L'Dovid Gam L'Avshalom. He never missed. He was always right. So he was a fantastic, fantastic political genius, and he was able to always give the correct answer. And this time, David HaMelech was up against. He was the first. He was an advisor to David. But then, when Avshalom rebelled, so he joined Avshalom. So now he was giving Avshalom advice against David. And of course, the advice he gave was good advice. The correct advice. Good in the sense that it was correct. So, what David HaMelech did was, he sent another individual to infiltrate the camp of Avshalom. And it was Hushai Ha'arki. And Hushai Ha'arki went to Avshalom, and it was a question of what to do. Should they attack David on the spot, right then and there, or should they wait? So Hushai Ha'arki went, and he said, he presented his case very well, and he said that the way he overcame it, interesting psychologically, he said, this is one time that Achitofel is wrong. No one can be right all the time. Very good argument to use at a board meeting. So everybody will always believe it. So this is, no matter how great the Chacham, this time he's wrong. And he says, and I'm telling you that to attack David now would be disastrous, because no matter how exhausted he is, he has the courage of a lion, and he's going to fight back and he'll destroy you. Better wait. We'll gather all of Klal Yisrael, and then we'll attack him. That was Hushai. Achitofel said, no, attack him now. Now he's weak. Attack him, he's going to be destroyed. So, David HaMelech was misfaled. Prayed to God that he should break the atzas
Achitophel, and that the Jews should not, the Avshalom, the Jews over with Avshalom should not follow Achitophel's Eitzah, but they should follow Chushai Arki's Eitzah. And that's what happened. They followed Chushai Arki, and of course the moment Achitophel saw that this was happening, he committed suicide. Because he knew that it's all over, no need to hang around. So that's where he says, "Va'ato lo kim toridem zer shochas anshe dumim mimra lo yechatzu yinayim." They won't live out half of the years, and he died before the age of 35. So it means that we didn't live out half of his years. Okay, so you'll say to me, very nice. But that's a particular case. That's a very particular case. And apparently, there was Hashgachas Hashem was on the side of David HaMelech, and the people, their emotions were caused to lean more towards Chushai Arki, so therefore God caused their emotions to lean more towards Chushai. I don't know how it worked. I mean, whether there was actually an intervention, or whether it was a Hashgachah, but whatever it was, that's what it worked out. He was misfollowed, that's what it worked out. They listened to Chushai Arki, and Achitophel was destroyed. Avshalom was destroyed. So the question is, you say, that's very nice. In that case, but there's always one question that a person has. The question a person has is, I could show you the life of Rishoyim, and I could show you how they met their destruction, but whenever you do that, the person always thinks in his mind, yeah, but if it wasn't for that one thing, he still would be around, and he still would be successful. So, as much as you try to show people, crime doesn't pay. Look what happened to Al Capone. Yeah, but what happened? They caught him in income tax evasion. They wouldn't have caught him in income tax evasion, he'd still be in Chicago. So a person always will say that it's not a conclusive proof. It's not a conclusive proof. He's showing me an incident. Okay, no matter how many you show me, I'll always argue that if it wasn't for that. And then I can always point to somebody that did make it. Maya Lansky died in his 80s. Natural causes. Okay. So you see, it's not so good to be a gangster. So the answer is like this. See, the answer is in this pasuk. That's the answer. Va'ato alokim toridem lever shachas. Anshe domen umirma lo yechetu yameyem v'ani etzach bach. It means to say that it has to happen. That's what it means. Achitophel is one example. But it has to be. So the question is, why does it have to be? Why does it have to be? And the answer is, you have to understand what the definition of evil is in Yadav. What the definition of evil is in Yadav. What is the definition? What is evil? In the world, evil is associated with a certain kind of emotion. Your conscience, let your conscience be your guide. So that means to say that anything your conscience tells you is correct. That means, if you're raised among the mafia and you don't kill somebody, you feel guilty. So that means that you committed an evil. But in Yadis has a different definition of evil. Different definition of evil. What's the definition of evil in Yadis? What is the definition of evil? How would you define evil in Yadis? What is evil? Definition of evil is, you see, there are two worlds. There's the world of the temporal, and there's the world of the eternal. The world of the temporal is the world of the instincts and the psyche. The world of the eternal is the world of the cell and all its kin, the world of the mind. The evil is to make a simple error, and that is to think that the world of the temporal is the good. That's what it is in Adam. That's basically what it is. To make a mistake and to think that the world of the temporal is the good. That this is the essence and this is the eternal. That's what evil is. Good is recognition of what the eternal is and the nature of the temporal and having the correct perspective. That's what good is. Okay, that's what good is. But evil is to make a simple mistake. That's the error. Now, what happens when a person makes a mistake and he thinks that the world of the temporal is really the eternal good? What happens to that person? So that person immediately puts all of his life's energies into the temporal. But the temporal is a strange kind of thing. The temporal is dependent on a lot of circumstances. It's a world in which there are tremendous circumstances, the type of existence that we have. And the person is constantly striving to make a thing into something which it cannot be, because of its very nature and definition. In other words, what he's trying to do is, he's trying to take something which is not of a permanent nature, and which is dependent on circumstances, which is subject to the world of chance, and he's trying to take that and carve out from that world something eternal for himself. But it can't be. Why can't it be? It can't be for several reasons. I'm not going to talk about the satisfaction that the person can attain from it. That's a different thing. The satisfaction the person can attain itself would be the destruction of such a thing. But aside from that, the temporal world, since it's subject to chance, and since it's subject to condition, so what happens is, the person's plans never work out. The plans are always subject to chance. There are so many phenomena constantly intervening. And the person on the whole will spend most of his life in frustration and dissatisfaction because of the nature of what he is after. So, in other words, like this. There's a beautiful chazal. Chazal say, Ein adam nifter min ha'olam v'chatzi taivaso biyada. V'chatzi taivaso biyada. A person doesn't live through this existence and walk away with half of his title. Not half. Why is that so? Because of the fact that the world of the temporal is such that that's the way it's constructed. The people that try to do it, every human being, every new person that arrives on this planet and tries this plan, is doomed to failure, and if he's successful, you'll read there are moments of success. Moments. But in the end, he is always a failure. Always a failure. Because the world of the temporal doesn't lend itself to that. It simply doesn't lend itself. Its nature is temporal. Its nature is conditioned. Depend upon condition, depend upon chance. And it can't be worked out. Every fool, every individual who comes to try, he's going to be the great chacham that's going to do it. Everyone has to fail. Of necessity has to fail. And if you read biographies of people who you think were very successful, and you read the biographies of their lives, you always find out that at the end there's a totally, completely different view than you imagined, and you project it onto that person. Why did you project that view onto that person? For the same reason that person projected that view onto reality. Same exact thing. And that's what the prophet said. It means to say, it doesn't mean they have to die before 35. If a person lives to 70 or 80, and most of his life was in pain, he really should have died. He died before 35. Maybe it means he's not nifter at all of a chatzi taivaso biyada. What does it make the length of his life? The only thing they're pointing to is they're showing you that Bilam died before he was 35. It's just something to attach the idea to. It's not really the main point. Achitofel died a young man. It's true. But if he would have died an old man, it wouldn't have been any different. It means to say like this. By Achitofel is an example. His whole life was put into this one thing. And so this was his chance for tremendous success with the rebellion of Avshalom. And all this chachma in his mind was really only for this one moment, so that he could achieve an ultimate success. So what did his success depend on? It depended on conditions, on chance, on Avshalom, on a big meeting with the advisors. Are they going to listen to him? Are they not going to listen to him? And it's true that David HaMelech's follow Hofra Tzasa Chitavaya was broken, and they followed Chushei Aki. But following the Chushei Aki is only one instance. Everybody has a Chushei Aki, many Chushei Akis in their life. And why did Achitofel fail? Not because of Chushei Aki in specific, but because of the universal Chushei Aki that lurks in every area of the world of the temporal. That's why he failed. And that's what the prophet means. That's what David HaMelech means. It's not just one Chushei Aki. Not just one. A person is short-sighted and myopic if he thinks that it's just that one thing. That one thing, yeah, only a fool says this is the one thing. What the Torah wants a person to recognize is it's not the one thing. It's all the things. It's all the frustrations because you're in the world of the temporal. Albert Einstein one time said that why did he go into the world of physics? Because he said he didn't have any patience for the regular world. But the regular world is very frustrating. Nothing works out. In the world of Chachma, the person went out without learning the prophet. Just an observation, because he was a wise man. And he saw the idea. He saw the idea. But that idea is a true idea. The only place that something works out for man that's in line with his desire and with his emotional need, his energy, is in the world of the eternal. That's where it works out. And I'll tell you something else. If a person works it out in the world of the eternal, he has the temporal also. He enjoys the temporal also. Why? Because then he doesn't put so much effort into temporal to try to squeeze out of it something that it's not capable of giving. But on the contrary, what he does is he enjoys it because for what it is, that's not the essence of the driver's energy. Yeah, he enjoys it. It's a nice day, the weather's nice, he enjoys it. But not that he's looking forward for a day that this is going to be his day because it's nice weather. I mean, this is not enough to satisfy a human being. And it's temporal and it doesn't work out. And that's why vacation never works out. Vacation is a good example of the... vacation is a good example of the chuseyaki, the small way. But that's really the concept. That's the idea. And there's another, yeah. The small alcohol. It's very good. Means it's just the small one. Otherwise, nothing. But it's an interesting thing. What did Achitofel do the moment he saw his plan didn't work? He hung himself. Committed suicide. It shows you an interesting thing. What is suicide, really? Why is suicide such a terrible thing in Yadav? A terrible thing. A person commits suicide. Can't bury him in the forest. All right, they always try to be the Lamed Kush. Can't bury him in the proper place in the forest. But what is suicide? Usually when you hear suicide, it usually brings up thoughts of empathy. I mean, you feel sympathy for the individual. But here Yadav says it's a terrible thing. Achitofel is an example. Achitofel committed suicide. Why? Well, what does it show you about suicide? What does it mean when a person commits suicide? Small song, person, what does it mean? It means he's saying one thing. It means he's saying there is only the temporal. That's what it means. A person who commits suicide is saying one thing. There is only the temporal, I can't have it, and that's why I'm going to kill myself. I remember I read about a person who was ill and they couldn't do the things they were able to do, and they said that because they were mountain climber and this, they're very active. They got very ill into the church. I can't have these things, commit suicide. Why? Because it means that their essence is a temporal. That's what it means. That's why Yadav. Yeah, Hemingway's an example. Hemingway committed suicide because he couldn't have his titles. The world of the temporal is gone. There's no more reason for existence. I'm going to destroy myself. That's what suicide says. That's the statement of suicide. I'm not talking about a person who commits it because of psychological years. I'm not talking about that. I'm not talking about a person that commits it because of an unconscious force, which is not under his control. I'm talking about an Achitofel, an intelligent man who has control. There's a rational kind of suicide. There's a neurotic suicide, which the Torah punishes a person from because he's not under his control. A psychotic, neurotic suicide, that's something else. Different types of suicide. But there's a suicide of Achitofel. It's a model. It's a rational suicide. What is a suicide? It means the temporal is what I want. I can't have it. And there's nothing else. And that's why I have to kill myself. That's what it means. That's Achitofel. That's the pasuk of Vato and Kintarim Vashachas. Yes. Yeah, Yerushim Gehenim.
About
Now, the other side, the tzaddik, it says it has the opposite. What is the tzaddik? Lahanchil ohava yesh. Okay. What does it mean? It's a strange thing. That word is. What is yesh? Is a strange thing. What does yesh mean? I'm not that much of a bucky, but I don't know of any other case where the word yesh is used as a predicate. It's always used as a subject. Yesh la el yadi. It means there is the power of man. So it's used as not as an object. Not as an object, okay? It's used as a verb. There is. A verb to be. There is. But over here, it's used as a predicate, as an object. L'hanchil ohavai, to give to those who love me, give them what? Yesh. What is yesh? It's a strange word, yesh. Yesh, there is. To give them there is. What does it mean? What was the concept of yesh? I don't think any other place in the Tanakh that has it is using that in that form. To my mind. It's an interesting thing, and I think it's the biggest sod in Yadav. The biggest sod. Perhaps the biggest sod. And that is that we have, it's also something that's important to speak about in Yeshiva, because I think it's something that's neglected. We neglect a lot in Yeshiva. That is, we say a person who was on an infantile level, a person who's on an infantile level can feel a closeness to our Kodesh Baruch Hu. Okay? You've got the child has imagination, and And in his imagination, really, what they tell him is he's God. I mean, he doesn't register, he doesn't know what it is, and it's sort of like something he abstracts from the some kind of a personal experience.
Personal experience.
Okay. On a very infantile level. That's really the but when a person grows older, he realizes it's nonsense. He realizes that Kadosh Baruch Hu doesn't have any emotions, God doesn't have any emotions, and this whole thing that he had in his mind of how he relates to God seems difficult and impossible to him and absurd. Okay, absurd. That's why I told you, those people, when they learned the Ma'ariv Ruchim, that stopped davening, they stopped being misfollowed because of that. Because originally, the reason why they were misfollowed, because they thought they imagined a God, a warm father in the sky with emotions, and therefore they could pray to such a kind of a concept. But the moment they saw that it's not true, and on the contrary, that's a Avodah Zarah, so they couldn't be misfollowed anymore. Couldn't be misfollowed anymore. Okay? This is a serious problem. So, how does a person handle such a thing? How does a person handle such a thing? Yad is the man of a person that he recognizes that HaKadosh Baruch Hu cannot in any way be known. Harinos Kodecho, even Moshe Rabbeinu could not know God's essence. He could only see the patterns of God's actions. And he, through Marian of all, was able to discover the patterns of God's actions. But so we can't have any kind of image, Kiloris and Kotamura. Anything from the figments of our imagination that's extrapolated from this existence, whether it's emotions or physical in any way, cannot possibly pertain to the Borei Olam, the creator of the universe, the source behind all the laws of the universe, and everything that we encounter in a physical sense, a physical way, that it's impossible. So this Borei Olam becomes so far removed from us. So how can we possibly relate to it? It's a problem. Okay? And yet we say, Korav Hashem l'chol korav, l'chol asheik uva emes. That God is very close to a person that calls upon him in truth, God is very close to him. What does it mean it's closeness? What was the David HaMelech has one pasuk in Tehillim, I would say, that sums it up more than any other pasuk, is a pasuk in Tehillim Ayin Gimel. In Tehillim Ayin Gimel, the pasuk says, Va'ani kirvas elokim lito. Last pasuk. Va'ani kirvas elokim lito. Before he says, the Pasuk for Kehine Rechetecha Yovedi, those who are distant from you will be destroyed. It's Mata Kolzona Mimeka. You cut off anyone that turns away from you. And then he says, Vani, Kivas Alakim Yitov. I, being close to God, is good. Shati Bar Hashem Alakim Machsi, Lasaper Kol Malachosecha. Talk about all of your actions. So what does it mean? What kind of a thing is that? What does it mean, Kivas Alakim Yitov? What's the answer? The answer is that Yadus has a different idea of closeness to God. A different idea of closeness to God. But just like the God of Yadus is the God that cannot be perceived in any emotional or physical sense, but he's the God that is more real than any existence, than any kind of existence, which means to say that on a level of a muscle, you would say, that the laws of nature are more real than any particular instance in nature. Which means if a stone falls to the earth and describes a specific path, so that stone is guided by some kind of an immaterial, whatever you want to call it, you can call it substance, but some kind of an immaterial existence that is responsible for every stone following the same pattern. And the particular stone is a physical stone, which is less real than the law behind the stone, because the physical stone can be destroyed, and it's only an instance. But more real is the ideas are more real. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the source of all Chochmah, is the most real, the only, the real existence. You can't say the most real, actually. Every time you talk about the HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the words fail us. But he is the real, that which is real. Yesh, what does Ram say? That the first answer, that Yeshom alakam matzuri, that he is the most real. And a person, Yad is the man of a person, that he recognized that concept of the real that appeals to the mind and not the real that appeals to the emotions. That's really the nisayon. That's the challenge of Yad. That's the Chet HaEgel. The Chet HaEgel was where they tried to support this idea with some physical entity. That was the Chet HaEgel. That was their failure. But now you have to understand, you have to take it a step further. What is a step further?
a step further, and I believe this is one of the things that's in the Moreh Nevuchim that most people do not understand when they read it. Because the Rambam talks about it, but you know the Rambam style. The Rambam doesn't highlight anything. Sometimes he says read it over again, but it doesn't help you too much. But it's something that's in the Moreh Nevuchim. I think the Rambam was trying to get this message across. But I don't think most people that read it see what he's talking about. But the Rambam saying is like this, really. That there is just like, just a Tzukim really. That's not the Rambam, Tzukim. The just like HaKadosh Baruch Hu is that which is real, and that kind of reality can only be perceived by our mind. When we say HaKadosh Baruch Hu is close to us, his closeness is more real than any closeness that we could ever entertain, or we could ever have. Any kind of closeness you can imagine. Closeness of a wife, husband, friend, teacher, whatever it might be. That closeness is still only a physical closeness, a psychological closeness, at best. But the closeness of a Kodesh Baruch Hu to a person, Korv Hashem L'chol, Korv L'chol Shirul HaMemes, it means it's a closeness that is tied to the human being's essence. It is not a material closeness, but that closeness is more real than any closeness that a person can imagine or desire. That's really what Yadus demands of a person to recognize, to realize, and to understand. And that's the pasuk. That's what David HaMelech says. He says that those who are far away from you will be destroyed. Are destroyed. It means to say, because they aren't partaking of that which is real. They don't partake of the real. But those who are close to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Ani Kivas Elokim Lito. It means, what kind of a closeness is it? It's a closeness that only my mind can perceive. My mind tells me it's close. Because I know that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is that which is real, and I know that there is something in man which is a non-physical element which can relate to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and therefore this must be the closest relationship, the only real closeness that a person can experience. Because it pertains to his essence, and it's related to the reality behind the entire universe. Related to the ultimate reality, related to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's what it means. So, in Yadus demands that a person rise above the emotional and the instinctual. Above the emotional and the instinctual. And realize that there is a different kind of closeness that you can't imagine and that you can't feel, but that's more real than any closeness that you could ever imagine or desire. How is a person close to HaKadosh Baruch Hu? How is a person close to HaKadosh Baruch Hu? How is this closeness to place? I would say in three ways. In three ways it takes place. It takes place, one, when a person studies Torah. When a person studies Torah, it means, and that's what the Rambam points out in the Moreh Nevuchim, when he says that a novel when he's learning is not the same as a novel when he's not learning, and when he's learning he's close to God, he's not learning, he's not close to God. And the mashal that the Rambam gives over there, the Rambam gives the Moreh Nevuchim mashal of who is close, he has the palace, and the people turn away. All that whole mashal, you have to understand, that whole mashal is trying to tell you that there's a reality of closeness that can only be expressed through a mashal, but it exists, and it exists only until it exists. Its existence can only be insight into such an existence can only be obtained through the mind of man, through the mind of a person. But the closeness to a Kadosh Baruch Hu, I would say, exists in three ways. One, when a person is learning Torah. That's one. The second way is when a person is standing before a Kadosh Baruch Hu. That means he recognizes he's in the presence of the Borei Olam, and he recognizes that it's an opportunity for him to formulate properly in front of HaKadosh Baruch Hu what his desires are and what he wants in life. That is the second way that he's close to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. At that moment, he's close to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And the third way that he's close to HaKadosh Baruch Hu is through keeping the Torah, keeping the system that God gave for this world as the perfect system for perfection of man. In those three ways, in those three instances, he is close to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, which means to say, he partakes of a closeness that I can't possibly tell you why in an emotional sense, his emotional sense, but it exists and is the only real closeness that a person can experience. In these three cases, he's close to why? How do I know he's close to God? Because my rationality dictates he must be close to God. Because if he's involved in God's thoughts, he must be close to him. Because that means that he's approaching him. He's approaching him, not in the physical sense, but he's approaching him. If he's standing before HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and he's organizing his values and his life, and he's asking HaKadosh Baruch Hu for certain things which will draw him as an individual closer to HaKadosh Baruch Hu? He has to at that moment be close to God. God relates to him. How do you know God relates to him? That's the concept of Shema Tzila. Shema Tzila means HaKadosh Baruch Hu listens to every Tzila. If he listens to every Tzila, doesn't even listen to every Tzila. Not in any way we can imagine somebody listening. Understand that that's absurd. It means to say that there is a link. There's a link. At that moment, there's a link. What kind of a link? I can't explain what kind of link. It's a link that exists that is real. And the third way is, of course, is following HaKadosh Baruch Hu's plan, which is the system of Yadus, the system of the Torah. Anyone that makes a commitment to follow that plan of HaKadosh Baruch Hu has to, of necessity, be close to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's a closeness. So there is a Yadus demands that a person rise above the imagination and recognize and attaches emotions, actually, to a kind of idea of closeness which his emotions can't recognize and only his mind can recognize. That's the challenge of Yadav. If you fail that challenge, then the person is serving the Egel Azhar. That's the Egel Azhar, is the other side of it, is the failure. That's what it means when it says, L'hanchil ohavai yesh. What does yesh mean? Yesh means existence. It is. It means we can't say anything about this good. There is nothing. What are you going to say about the good that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives me? Can you describe it? There's no way to describe it. It's above the emotions. It's above the senses. You can only say one thing about it. It's real. It's yes. It exists. It means that those that are close to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, they will inherit what? The real. That which exists. And you can't say anything more about it. But you know that it is so. That's the possible. That's the possible. And that's why you say, that's what, I am the Russell Kinruzah. I am the Russell Joseph. Mancholovai? Yes. So that's why when you make a seum, the minute is when you make a seum, you'll notice these two psukim are there. These two psukim are there. It says, Ono Melim Vehema Melim. Ono Mashkinim, the beautiful seum, Vehema Seum. Many of you don't say it anymore. But these are really good reason to say it. Something is the perfection of the seum expression. That there are two roots. One root, Anu Amelim Vehim Amelim. And then, what does it mean? It means they are in the world of the instinctual, the world of the psychological. They're working hard in that world. We're working in a different world. It's Zelu Mazeh. Zelu Mazeh. And what does it say? The end is, Lahan Chalav Vayesh means that's the result. The world of Chachma, the abstract world, what is the end result? Yes. And what is the end result of the world of the physical and the instinctual? It's this pasuk. This pasuk. Vato v'kim tawidu l'ver shachas anshidam mirma lo yechatsu yimeyam. Kani ektach bach. Okay.